Hello, you're very welcome to Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics podcast from our political team at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler. With me today, Paul Cunningham, Juliette Gash and Micheál Lehane. We're the eve of poll, the real poll, tomorrow Friday as we record this. The opinion polls, however, and they're only giving us snapshots along the way. We know that all the usual caveats to be entered there. But the opinion polls have been suggesting, haven't they, right throughout the campaign, this has all been heading in one direction, and it's been Catherine Connolly's direction.
Yeah, and even the latest opinion poll, the Irish Independent Ireland Thinks one, kind of says that once again, talking about figures like 40 to Catherine Connolly, 25 to Heather Humphrey, 7 to Jim Gavin, about 28% either spoiling their vote or don't know in the middle of that. So there is a lot, I suppose, to play for there. If that huge group who haven't decided in that do actually go out and vote, that obviously is going to be a thing to watch for tomorrow as well. The turnout, never a huge turnout anyway in presidential elections, but a Friday before bank holiday weekend, as well as after what has been, as when it did have some big key moments in it, the campaign, but by and large, fairly lackluster.
Yeah. And it's been interesting as well, Paul, hasn't it? The opinion polling suggesting that Catherine Connolly, whose lead is much more pronounced in the opinion polls anyway, with younger voters, that's been increasing, and she now has, in the latest poll, didn't she, a majority in every age group.
And the other thing is that the number of undecideds is shrinking, and they are breaking again towards Catherine Connolly. So it doesn't matter what poll you're looking at, the trend is pretty clear. A week ago we were saying that it would need some big event to change the trajectory of the election. That hasn't happened, certainly didn't happen on the primetime debate. It's just been an incremental, more of the same, a deepening of the trend, and that trend is towards Catherine Connolly.
Juliette, you were out after that big debate, weren't you, with the Connolly campaign? So the morning after, what was the mood like?
Yeah, I was there. Yeah, gosh, I'm losing track of days. Yesterday morning, Wednesday, and Tuesday was the debate, indeed. Yeah. What month is it? So it started off in Monaghan Town, Heather Humphrey's backyard, so an interesting choice. And Michelle O'Neill, the First Minister in Northern Ireland, was there, Sinn Féin Vice President, supporting her. Very different style of politician. Interesting to see her flanked by, you know, Matt Carthy was there, Piers Doherty was there, and some young activists as well, including one who said she had written initially to Catherine Connolly suggesting she run, and Catherine Connolly thanking her for that letter. Catherine Connolly admitting she was very tired after the debate. She said she'd gotten around 3 hours sleep, and she apologised to supporters for not having the same level of energy as she wished to. And she was quite quiet, you know, during the post speech interviews during the doorstep. Some of us actually were straining to hear her because there was quite a lot of background noise with all the supporters there. But she got a phenomenal reaction wherever she went. We were in Monaghan Town, and then they didn't do a walkabout in Monaghan Town. Then we went to Cavan. She met students in a Cavan Institute, which is a post-leaving cert college. And I spoke to the students after they'd spoken to her, and they were very impressed by her. They said she was really nice. They thought they would vote for her. They said they would vote. They hadn't expected her. You know, they told me they'd gotten leaflets relatively close to the time she arrived. A lot of them were in Halloween costumes because they're on midterm next week. And Catherine Connolly, you know, grabbed a wig off one young man, popped on the blonde wig. She did it again another point, at which point one of the media advisors was like, take the wig off, because, you know, it's going to be on social media. And it was, but she was really game for a laugh. You know, she stood beside others in you know, very elaborate costumes. Mm-hmm. One woman, I think she may have been a lecturer, had a Michael D. Higgins knitted doll, you know, cue mini jokes about the relationship between Michael D. Higgins and Catherine Connolly and whether that doll would do well out of the exchange. But he was fine. He was intact afterwards.
Yeah. So let's talk about Heather Humphreys as well at this stage and how she's been approaching the final week of the campaign. What's your impression of the Fine Gael campaign, the Heather Humphreys campaign as well? Because she was trying to go, it's more than Fine Gael, it's Heather.
Yeah, it's Heather, and very much on that today, that she was at a conference in the Northwest talking about women in agriculture, and she seemed to, you know, identify that she would be, she says, the first person from a farming background, the first farmer.
She met Mary Martin there as well.
Mary Martin was there, yeah. There was a big embrace. And I think she has been trying to emphasise that, but of course she was the one who had that campaign tactic, which was described as nasty and negative as well, focusing in on Catherine Connolly's work as a barrister, which probably didn't go as well as Fine Gael might have hoped, judging by the reaction to it generally in the public as well, but also the interventions of Jim O'Callaghan kind of backing the barrister's view again that they have no choice in the cases that they take. Heather Humphrey saying today that she did her best in TV debates, but maybe she didn't do as many of them over the course of her career as others. And I think that's a very telling point when it came to it. She is the veteran politician, but the veteran politician that curiously entered into this contest without the type of media experience that you would have expected of someone in that. Catherine Conley, a much, relatively speaking, more lower profile political career, but far more at ease in that medium. And I mean, that's so important. And the fact that what happens in TV debates and radio debates, the way it feeds across social media, where a lot of this was fought out, something like over 566,000 mentions across social media between the 23rd of September and October. I think that's a reach of over 70 million. So you can see the importance of this. Compared to Catherine Connolly, Heather Humphreys hasn't been able to play with what seems like a sense of abandon that Catherine Connolly is approaching things, seeming to be almost not a politician, even though, of course, she is overall, when you look at her answers, a consummate one.
And I want to come back to that point of, you know, traditional media and social media and traditional ways of campaigning and new ways of campaigning, because maybe there are lots of lessons here, and for ourselves as well as everyone else. But in terms of the support and the message, Paul, that Heather Humphreys has been putting out in the final week, lots of emphasis on support from, you know, former Taoiseach. We had Sean Gallagher. We've had the Taoiseach and other Fianna Fáil ministers saying they're going to vote for Heather, even though they're not formally calling for that support. I mean, that's going to be really fascinating, won't it, when the ballot boxes are opened on Saturday, when we see what number did go Jim Gavin, and do they go number two, Heather Humphreys?
Yeah, just on Heather Humphreys, I was there for the launch of her campaign in Mullingar, and at the time, the thrust of it was Heather Humphreys, a person of the people who is personable, and who we then saw it. She stayed around for 2 or 3 hours afterwards, taking photographs with everyone, giving hugs to everyone. And then at some point earlier on in the campaign, there was a sense that the strategy wasn't working. And as Micheál just alluded to, it went more onto attack mode of Catherine Connolly's record rather than who Heather Humphreys was. And at times it seemed to me was that she wasn't always comfortable in that role. Mm. I mean, she is feisty when it comes to toe-to-toe with Sinn Féin. She's got very strong views, and we would have seen her in the chamber on that. But going after Catherine Connolly, sometimes it didn't look convincing, as well as it also ultimately didn't work out being productive for her either. But as you mentioned, people nearly forget there is a Fianna Fáil candidate who's going to be on the ballot paper. Mm-hmm. We had a poll earlier on, or two of them, and they had the fieldwork was conducted when Jim Gavin was still a candidate. And the most recent Business Post Red Sea, definitely when he wasn't on a candidate, and he's still on 10%.
10, that's 7 in today's one, then. So anywhere between 5 and 10.
And even, well, if you take out the Don't Knows out of the Business Post poll, he was up to 11%. Mm. Getting very close to 12.5%, where the man who isn't campaigning could end up, if it happens, being able to enable Fianna Fáil to get some of its expenses back.
Because the other thing that's been coming through in all the opinion polling has been the one thing that does unite the electorate is the dissatisfaction with the slate and with the process. Of course, we've had Declan Ganley and others this week calling loudly for people to spoil their vote. We've had other people arguing against it. It's going to be interesting to see how the spoiled vote is handled during the count on Saturday, isn't it, Micheál?
Yes, I suppose if there is such a momentum behind one candidate, and if things are proceeding at speed at that level, rather than being a very close, tight election where spoiled votes might be adjudicated on a little bit more rigorously, that would suggest that it could happen. There's an anticipation too, I suppose, that there's going to be extra spoiled votes, so returning officers will be ready for that. But it would be,
and those votes will be. They're not all going to end up in Dublin Castle, are they? Where?
No, I think that in each count centre, isn't it, and they're adjudicated on there. But you would sense that returning officers will have people ready to make early calls on that.
And the Jim Gavin vote, what that is going to be and where that goes, that's going to be a key thing on Saturday morning.
We can't really interpret it because we won't have an exit poll. In other words, that's when voters come straight out of the polls and talk to pollsters. But what we can see is that some in Fianna Fáil are going to vote for Fianna Fáil, even if the Fianna Fáil candidate isn't in the electorate. That's clear. There have been other people who were dissatisfied with the two candidates and saying they were either going to spoil, not turn up, or vote for Jim Gavin. So it's a little bit unclear just A, who's going to vote for him, and then just how many people are going to vote for him. But nonetheless, it'll be a key thing to watch within the count.
Well, we mightn't, I suppose, know where his vote is going, though. If this is all decided on the first count, it'll just be a tally estimate, won't it, then, of where the number twos were. So it'll be.
But the polls were suggesting that they were breaking 50-50, as opposed to where one might have thought it would have been Heather Humphreys having the advantage.
Yeah. That's something we'll certainly be looking closely at.
Just one other point on Heather Humphreys, which Fine Gael were emphasising at the start of the campaign, that she was that Minister of Rural Affairs who went around the country giving grants and the like. But I think going all the way back to John O'Donoghue in 2011, when he said that he was being defeated in a hall that he'd helped deliver for a constituency, and he hoped the irony wasn't lost. People decide when they get things quite rightly and they make a call that that was their own money anyway. And usually there is a feeling in local communities that they've been waiting too long for it. And I think that was a play there. Yeah. I don't think there was any great benefit to Heather Humphreys and all the grants delivered as she saw it. And Fine Gael thought that was going to be a key part of the campaign.
I was just to jump in one ahead of you, just because I was in the count when that happened. Mm-hmm. And he made his speech, and that for the rest of the afternoon, everyone was talking just about what had been said, mm-hmm. and just about that, how eaten bread is quickly forgotten. Sorry.
I was just going to say that I was at the ploughing championships when all three candidates were still in the race and were there. And Heather Humphreys got an amazing reaction at the ploughing championships. You know, she was really among her people, and lots of people coming up for hugs, selfies, handshaking. Less so for Catherine Connolly. Now, whether that was a case of, you know, a point in time, or she just wasn't among her supporters. That said, she is trending very strongly outside of Dublin, Catherine Connolly. Still in Dublin too, but outside.
Of course, as well, right through the campaign, of course, we have the budget that landed in the middle of it. We have the cost of living that is running way ahead of inflation. According to the latest figures, people certainly seeing it in their grocery bills and their energy bills. So all of this may be impacting the mood music of the debate. And I suppose a key figure on the Fianna Fáil side in both of those respects, politically and economically, is Jack Chambers. He'll have a lot of questions to answer at the end of this, won't he?
Jack Chambers will, and so will Martin Hayden. I think there'll be a lot of questions asked of the campaigns, how they were run and who they didn't run and why they ran, who they ran.
Traditional media versus new media. The United Left, what the Connolly campaign is calling the movement. Has something different been going on here?
Well, I think it's different, first of all, that you have the parties of the left unifying. We've heard about the calls for unity on the left and it hasn't happened. If it is the case that Catherine Connolly wins, well, they're going to be able to point to this, not just in terms of success in this election alone, but also point to how it could be of use in the next general election. Obviously, they're very different. Some of the policies between these parties are quite stark. Carbon tax would be one. Europe would be another. But nonetheless, I think the photographic image, if it is the case that Catherine Connolly wins, of all those party leaders standing together saying, we can do something different, will be powerful and it will be cogent. And the question is, how do they build on it? And I think some of us will be just watching out to see, are there some parties on the left who are claiming victory for them and their efforts over others? Just how long does the unity last?
Of course, the Sunday poll was suggesting, wasn't it, that it was Sinn Féin and the Social Democrats who'd been benefiting most so far and Fianna Fáil taking the hits so far. But we have to see how it all plays out in the real polls.
Yeah, and I suppose among the left too, it will cause discomfort for some in some parties, won't it? But at the same time, if Catherine Connolly was successful, that would be two kind of big events and two big results over the course of the year. One, the kind of stalling and preventing of the government being formed at the beginning of the year, and then this one at the end. And I mean, there is no doubt that, I mean, when Mary Lou MacDonald spoke about Game Changer, it was kind of viewed with a degree of scepticism. But the Sinn Féin entry into the Catherine Connolly campaign did seem to bring far more structure to things on the ground, which was notable for the last 2 weeks.
In the sense of
being able to deploy a certain number of people in the right directions.
And we heard from Mark Ward, who's the Dublin Midwest TD in with Owen O'Brien, and he was saying they were having three teams out a day heading through the community, and part of what was working was it was government versus opposition, and very
so
clearly
in that
defining
sense,
it.
Yeah, what Mary Lou MacDonald said at the start of this campaign, didn't she, back in the end of September, that this was going to be a referendum on the government and this is what she wanted it to be. This presumably will be what the United Left would be aiming to claim on Saturday night, that they have come together, they have shown there is a real alternative, and it almost makes it, does it game on again after the result of the general election?
Oh, no, there'll be an afterflow from it. I didn't actually answer your earlier question, just on that sort of traditional media and social media. I mean, I think to a certain extent they went hand in hand, but that benefited Catherine Connolly. Micheál alluded to the fact that Heather was saying maybe she didn't have much experience, but it meant that if Catherine Connolly was doing well in these debates, they were quickly being chopped into social media digestible pieces, and they were being pumped out through a coalition of parties who had that anti-government sentiment working. So the two things worked hand in hand.
Amplified, I think, is the key term now they use there. Mm. Amplified.
Thank you. I'll write that down. And
it's also interesting because we had the whole change in political advertising, didn't we, midway through the campaign. So, Meta changing the position on political advertising, but it was these influencers and, you know, people who were getting in on the, you know, after the, you know, smear the whatever out of her, people, you know, turning that into a joke about Catherine Connolly cross the road backwards one day or whatever.
Yeah, and Catherine Connolly social media campaign, it did seem, again, like the way Catherine Connolly is able to present herself, almost non-political, organic almost. And I think a lot of other parties will try and replicate that now. And you're seeing bits of that already today from young Fine Gael. And when it doesn't work, it really doesn't work. It's one of those things.
Yeah. What are you saying?
Speaking of new media, though, Paul, you cropped up in the campaign.
Wait, is this the real Paul Connolly?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
A hologram.
Yes, he's in three dimensions here. He actually really is Paul Connolly. That was a bit concerning, wasn't it? Seeing yourself and it wasn't yourself. It was fake.
Yeah, it was, well, the first thing was I looked 5 years younger and 10 kilos lighter. But yes, when you're looking at the professionalism involved and the fact that for people who don't pay that much attention to news, which is most people, that they did have that authenticity.
Explain to anyone who hasn't seen the ad, although
so you
I think
see
most
the,
people have at
the
9
o'clock news presenter, Sharon Ní Bhealach, doing an introduction. Once again, it wasn't her, someone else's voice. And she's indicating that Catherine Connolly has pulled out of the campaign. It then cuts to a clip of Catherine Connolly announcing the same with people going, no, no. And then it cuts to a video of me standing outside Leinster House. But if you looked at someone's mouth, you could tell that it was a fake. Mm. But just taking a step back, it was pretty damn convincing. And according to the experts, it also took time. So if we're talking about how AI develops every 6 months, what is it going to be like by the time of the next general election? What type of disinformation and misinformation could be put out there? And I think that's what it is. It was rather a bit creepy. Mm.
And the argument is that by changing the rules, and this is all down to a row between the social media companies and the EU, isn't it, over the regulation of online content and so on. But in a way, that change in the rules and the fact that there aren't any political ads, it means it's easier for the bad actors to just go ahead and break the rules, and they've got the field all to themselves.
And that was it. It was up first, I think it was on Facebook on an account called RTAI. And it was actually my wife sent me a message, pinged me and said, you better have a look at this. And, you know, there was efforts made immediately to get onto Meta to take it down, which did happen. But I think that's the question is, how long was it there for? And even when they did take it down, it had already been shared so many times that you can still see it now. It was up on news sites. It was on the telly. It was everywhere.
And of course, X don't take things like that down. They'll label them, but they leave them there to proliferate.
Any thoughts on the Irish language in this election campaign? There was some controversy over the fact that there wasn't a debate in Irish because at that stage, two of the three candidates couldn't really speak very much Irish, even though Heather Humphreys had said previously when she was Minister for the Arts on the Gaeltacht, I think, wasn't it, as well, for a while, that she would learn Irish, but she didn't at the time and expressed her regret, grow on Zima, or he not grow she and on Nismo Gwelga Alarts. Catherine Connolly, of course, did go and learn Irish after 2004 and now speaks fluent Irish and very beautifully and effectively. And particularly with younger voters, I suppose, would you call it the kneecap generation? There seems to be more of a feeling. Eamon O'Queeve was even talking about this a little, wasn't he? But certainly it seems to be a thing with the younger generation.
Ironically, something that would have been influenced in some part by Heather Humphreys and the programme when she was in charge of the centenaries and a lot of emphasis on the primary schools at the time. So in some ways, she's hoist on her own petard there.
That is one of those ironies, isn't
it?
Nearly 10 years later.
But I think as a general rule... Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think, obviously, you know, on the one hand, it's very important to have respect for and a grá for the Irish language. But unfortunately, the way it's taught or the way it has been taught in schools means a lot of us leave school without a good ability to speak Irish. Yeah. And it doesn't come up in everyday life. So to judge someone on their inability to speak Irish may be a little unfair. However, as you say, Heather Humphreys was Minister for the Gaeltacht and she didn't get to bring up her Irish as a result.
And there was an increasing number of younger people in particular mentioning this. And of course, it comes against we've had the DUP saying, you know, because both candidates were in favour of votes for Irish citizens in the North to be able to vote in presidential elections, which they can't currently. You had Emma Little Pengetty giving out about that. And of course, there's the war about the Irish language in Belfast and dual signage and people arguing that it's been weaponised. Mm. And it's just interesting to watch the development of that debate, I suppose.
Because it does tie into not just sort of the issue of the Irish language and speaking it, but also in the case of Heather Humphreys, if you're talking about cross-border stuff, it was also the Orange Order. And what play that had as well with, as you said, a younger generation who are looking at things differently from maybe their parents who do remember things like when the conflict was continuing on our island. So there was a number of these different pulls. And it was something that Heather Humphreys mentioned on several occasions, that if you go onto social media, the things you're seeing about me, about my family, about my culture, about my religion are really stark. So I think that'll take some time to wash out.
And that clearly hurt her. She spoke about that during the campaign. But did she make enough of the fact that she's from the Presbyterian tradition? We had Sam McConkie, who's a leading Presbyterian here in the South, talking about that, the fact that that was an advantage to a candidate. And we also had, was it Francie Molloy, the former Sinn Féin MP, saying that a Presbyterian just by themselves would be a great argument for
she
a United
did,
Ireland.
I mean, she did talk directly about being
of tone in that. Didn't
exactly,
she,
that she was a Republican in the...
I think it took a little time, though. I think it took a little bit of time before she was, I don't want to say playing that card because that's who she is, but I think it took a little bit of time before she was more owning that Presbyterianism, you know, as something that could be a positive. You know, she would talk about being from a border community and being from a minority religion or being from a minority community. And I wonder, does everyone out there now, they probably do, but during the campaign, did all the voters who might vote for her, were they aware of that fact?
It is kind of ironic, though, at a point compared to 97 when Mary McAleese got elected, and when you're at a time where people are talking about a border poll, that idea of building bridges, and it was something Bertie Ahern spoke about when influencing his decision to back Heather Humphreys, it just isn't cutting across and cutting through in the same way as it was back then.
No, certainly not. I'm wondering, I was saying this to Paul earlier, I'm wondering how soon on Saturday, if the real vote does match the opinion polls, which is, of course, completely in the hands of the people. But before we hear the word cohabitation mentioned, you'd know all about that, wouldn't you, Paul?
That's my friend Scott here beside me. I'm never not going there. I mean, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch everything that happens on Saturday.
Because
there's
so many
France, ramifications from it.
Yeah, you would also often have a president who has much more powers, obviously, the French president, but who would have to work in concert with a government with diametrically opposed political views.
Yeah, and will that... I mean, we saw the change in style, I suppose, of presidency under Michael D. Higgins, you know, being more outspoken. And the expectation for among some is that were Catherine Connolly to win, she would be more outspoken again. Certainly she has expressed views that are at odds with the current government. So how will they relate to one another?
Even though at the same time, when she's pressed on that, what would you say to Donald Trump? And she did seem to suggest that she would take the cautious approach and didn't expect issues like genocide to be on the agenda. And I think when you do look at her record as Lasky and Corliss, something she talks about a lot, she did strike a neutral pose on that consistently. So I think in some ways, Catherine Connolly, when it comes to it, and she has said that the role of presidency is different to the one she currently occupies, could, when it comes to speeches and the like, observe the parameters of the Constitution even more. And she will be in her first term too, compared to Michael D's second. What I think will be different for the government, undoubtedly, is the monthly meeting behind closed doors, which she said she sees as a two-way process. And that's where the Taoiseach updates the president. Mm. She sees the welfare of the people and putting that to the government as being important. So I think when Micheál Martin rocks up there, if it is Catherine Connolly, in a few weeks' time, that he could not just be briefing, but he could find himself scolded.
I think, so just one extra thing is, one of the things about Michael D. Higgins, we forget that he was in for 14 years and he was becoming more strident as those years went on. I think to a certain extent, and this is just my belief, is that Catherine Connolly first has to get a handle on the office, has to sort of understand the parameters, even though smart woman, she knows it already, but doing it is something different. And that maybe it'll be a year's time before some of those tensions arise. And it could well be on something like when Ireland holds the presidency of the European Council, when some of those European policies are being advanced, passed here in Dublin at council meetings, that might be the occasion where the person who we saw in the debates, maybe we begin to see her again.
I don't, just, and it's a pure guess and a pure punt at this point, I actually don't think that will happen. I think the way she's spoken about different roles, parameters, and very clear, and if something like the triple lock comes to her her desk, that she can't do anything about it.
But I think on that one,
and she has been quoting the constitution of all the, well, of all the candidates. Clearly, we're only down to two now. But she has more than anybody else that I've heard in the race been quoting the constitution and specific parts of the constitution as it relates to the president. Yeah. And of course, the interesting thing when you look at anything to do with the presidency is in the constitution is how often, on the advice of the government, on the advice of the Taoiseach and the government, on the advice of the Council of State.
But on the triple lock one, it's interesting because it's solely up to her. She may convene the Council of State, but the decision is hers. Should she refer it to the Supreme Court and it's found to be lawful, then no appeal can happen. So it could well be it's better to sign it in and let someone else then take the case.
Because the argument often is it's only when it's enacted that you can find the right part of the law where it's not working on which to bring the most effective challenge, and you might get better change.
I'll cut across Juliet again.
It was just that Gareth Sheridan was also invoking the Constitution at his when he launched his campaign, which...
We had that Aintool bill, of course, during the week on the nomination process. It doesn't have any effect constitutionally. It's a private member's bill. But it has, as we've been saying, been an issue with the public. How quick or how much of an appetite do you think there's going to be in Leinster House, given how, with how much enthusiasm Shannon reform has
exactly
been embraced?
Exactly. It's going to be the same as Shannon reform. There'll be a bit of talk for a few weeks and nothing will happen.
Although we could always, I mean, there has been a citizens' assembly on this. I mean, there are recommendations there. We are going to have to do...
You're reaching here, okay?
Yeah. Oh, okay, I'm reaching, am I? Well, just don't remember.
Is there anything to be said for another citizens' assembly?
I suppose things could still have been different, you feel, if Maria Steen, despite the sense of angst that there is among her supporters, had launched a campaign and was in Leinster House a lot more in the weeks leading up to the deadline.
And yeah, you see, so maybe this is a question that won't go away, whatever the lack of political will amongst the parties
maybe
to engage.
And I suppose
with it.
People on that side will point to that turnout figure, won't they?
We've got to go. We're in recess next week. One question before I go. Where is the housing plan? Where is the infrastructure plan that we've been waiting with bated breath for quite a while, haven't we?
You're not happy with the National Development Plan. You want the actual detail of what's going to be built.
Delivery, baby. That's what I
As
thought.
I say, the Toshi the Chacht.
Toshi the Chacht.
Like the Guinness.
Okay, so with that, slán go fóill. Remember to go vote on, and we'll talk to you again next week. Slán.